Chapter 1
Fuck!
I shouted as I jumped back. The shimmer of light from Honest Abe faded away to reveal the newest world that the dimensional engine, patent pending, had brought my girls and I to. The maple trees of the wildlife sanctuary had been replaced with a yawning canyon that stretched out into the night. The earth underneath me shook, as the place where the last version of Saul had been standing crumpled and fell away. I swallowed hard as I realized that if it wasn't for the dimensional engine patent pending, then the circle of ground that made up my pocket dimension would have broken apart too. I shook my head as the place where I'd been standing cracked, splintered, and then dropped into the shadows below. I glanced down at my watch. It was 3 a.m., so the sun wouldn't rise for another few hours. I turned to look behind me at the makeshift cabin where my girls had been asleep, and saw they'd all woken up, and their shadows hurried toward the inside of our shelter. I stole a peek at the ledge of our pocket dimension to make sure that it was still intact, and then ran after them.
Dave Meyer, hurry!
Fela shouted as she stood in the wide doorway to our shelter. The saber-toothed lion woman's black tufted ears pinned against her head as she stared at me. She was silhouetted by the lamp that someone had lit inside of the wooden structure, and as I ran toward her, I couldn't help but notice the way her breasts bounced underneath her leather tube top. Her black tufted tail stuck straight into the air, and her slitted pupils had become wide black saucers, but she didn't go inside until I'd reached her.
This world is falling apart,
Acrasis said.
It is like my world.
The gleaming slime girl sat in the middle of the cabin. Her oil-slick skin shimmered in the lamp that sat beside her. And her wide eyes stared unblinkingly at Fela and I as we hurried over to them. She had backed up into Floppy, Fela's 5-foot-tall woolly mammoth, and the furry animal had wrapped its trunk around her in comfort. It's just an earthquake, I told her as I sat down next to her. I knew that the slime girl that I'd picked up 3 worlds ago had been on a planet that had broken apart before she came to Earth and consumed every living creature. And I thought that I could see fear in her deep emerald green eyes as she stared at me for reassurance. I wrapped my arm around her slender waist and then pressed her slick skin against me as I forced a smile onto my face, despite the knot in my stomach.
It'll pass soon.
Emma said as she scooted over the dirt floor to wrap a pale arm around Acrasis. The blue-eyed beauty had come along with me after I'd landed on her world. It had been an electric apocalyptic hellscape that had been stuck in the 1900s after Nikola Tesla released an energy blast without using a Faraday cage. Most of the people and animals had died instantly, but those who survived had been given lightning powers. Emma had run into Fela and I shortly after we arrived, and had opted to come with us rather than spend the rest of her life in the world where only a few humans remained, especially since most of those were cannibals.
This world shakes like my world before it fell apart,
the slime girl said.
Will your machine keep our Earth from breaking apart?
It should, I said. Honestly, I had no idea if the machine that my father had built would keep our pocket dimension together. But I wasn't about to tell Acrasis that. My father had left me quick instructions for the dimension engine, patent pending. But the message hadn't covered what would happen if we came into a world that was literally coming apart at the seams. He did say that the machine would give us 6 more meters every time I went to a new dimension, and that the 1972 Lincoln Continental would anchor me to the pocket dimension. But he'd been killed by the fucking Illuminati reptile pedo fucks, his words, not mine, before he could give me any better instructions. He had managed to tell me that he was actually my father and not my uncle like I'd believed while I grew up. He'd had me with a woman named Doris, but when she died, he'd fallen apart. He'd given me to his sister, the woman I knew as my mother, but he'd stayed in my life as my uncle. He was a paranoid genius. And I'd finally found another version of him in the last dimension, though that iteration of Saul hadn't been able to help me with the machine either. He had been just as anti-government, and he'd warned me that if I met any other Sauls in the future, that I should bring up Doris. She would be a fixed point in all of their lives, even if they never had me, and that would be the best way to get him to listen to me instead of blasting me with whatever shotgun he had on hand.
How long will this last, Dave Meyer?
Fela asked as she squatted down on her muscular, fur-covered calves. The saber-toothed lion woman had been the first person I'd met on my unintentional trip through the infinite dimensions that had branched off from mine. I'd accidentally activated the dimensional engine, patent pending, when I'd meant to destroy it. But Saul had expected it and left me with a gun, 3 mags of bullets that were almost gone, and a few MREs, along with the recording that told me he was my father. I'd landed in Fila's dimension, eaten her food, and been chased back to Honest Abe just in time to take the gorgeous woman and her pet miniature woolly mammoth with me. She'd been pissed at first, but since then she'd decided she loved me and wanted to have cubs. "I think they last a few minutes," I responded, as I motioned for all the girls to huddle closer. The wooden slats of our makeshift cabin shook as the earthquake reached its zenith. The crates filled with glass containers clinked against each other, and the new equipment that we'd gotten from the magpies in the last dimension shifted like they were about to topple over. I heard the whine of metal under stress and hoped that the nails we'd used would hold up under the strain. The four of us clung to each other as we waited for the earth to stop shaking, and I swallowed my heart as it crawled into my throat. I tried to keep a smile on for my girls, but I was terrified that we'd die before the dimension engine patent-pending machine could recharge. It would take at least 48 hours, but I wouldn't know how much longer that it needed until I could check the engine in the front of the rusted Lincoln. Minutes stretched by as the earth shook beneath us. A thunderous crack echoed through the air around us, and I braced myself for our quickly built shelter to fall down on top of us. When nothing happened, I opened my eyes and realized that the earthquake had finally subsided. "I think it's over," I said after a few seconds of eerie silence.
"We should leave,"
Emma said as she stood and brushed the dirt off her black bustle skirt. A few curls had fallen out of her tidy bun, but she shoved them back behind her ear before she offered a hand to help me up. The puffy sleeves of her white blouse were covered in dust, and she huffed when she saw it out of the corner of her eyes.
"Will we not be safe inside of the cave?"
Fila asked as she stood. Her tail slashed the air behind her as her pupils shrank back to their usual slits, and her yellow-green eyes took in the makeshift cabin. She could see in the dark better than any of us, though the light from the lamp did cast a small ring of light around us. Floppy stood, shook his massive head, and then gave a victorious blast from his waving trunk. His molten brown eyes looked hopefully at me, but all I could do was shake my head and pet him on his thick, greasy fur.
"There may be aftershocks,"
Emma said as she led the charge to the outside.
"I read about them in a book on volcanoes. Apparently before and after an earthquake, there are more tremors."
"And sometimes the aftershocks are worse," I muttered. I thought of the Hollywood disaster movies where an earthquake set off a chain of events that led to the destruction of the world and wondered if that was what was happening in the new world we were in. I wouldn't know until we'd at least gotten a decent look at our surroundings, and I was pretty sure that wasn't going to happen until after the sun rose, if it even did. The air outside of the cabin smelled like freshly tilled earth, and I was glad that I'd thought to grab the lantern so that I could at least get a peek at our little pocket dimension. The ground had a few cracks around the edges, but it seemed to be holding together well enough for the moment, and I smiled as I realized that my Saul must have made sure the ever-widening perimeter would be just as anchored as the engine itself.
"Oh, my!"
Emma gasped. I turned to look at the pale beauty, and my heart hammered in my chest as I reached for my Glock. But there weren't any monstrous creatures looming up out of the shadowy darkness. Instead, I saw small globe-like lamps filled with amber light begin to float out of the canyon that surrounded us. They had little black squares of solar panels around their base, like some of the solar lawn lights that I'd seen in my world, though these were able to move around rather than having to be stuck in one spot. The little lanterns rose up out of the depths of the world below us like fireflies. There were thousands of them, and soon the shadowy world around us became visible. One of the globes bobbed its way toward me like a jellyfish in the water. It was no bigger than my hand, but it lit a 3-foot area around it. Somehow, the lamp seemed to recognize where the light of its comrades ended, and they spread out until all of the world around us was bathed in the soft amber hue. I picked my way across the dirt circle to the ledge and peered over to see what kind of world we'd found ourselves in. There were mounds of dirt as far as I could see, and they filled the massive canyon that stretched out around us. I couldn't help but think of the movie WALL-E and wondered if there was some little robot down there trying to organize the discarded tables, TVs, and couches.
It looks like the pictures that I've seen of the Grand Canyon,
Emma said in her gentle accent as she came up beside me. It does, I agreed. For all I knew, this world had diverged from mine when the Grand Canyon had been formed, since there was no Grand Canyon in Michigan on my world. Though by the amount of discarded debris below us, I was pretty sure that humans had managed to make use of it. I glanced up to the canopy of stars above us and wondered if there was a space station with fat human beings carried around on floating chairs. I couldn't shake the feeling that whatever had happened in this world had been a lot like the kids' movie with the sad little robot that had been left to clean up all the garbage that humans had made. I just hoped that we didn't run into any angry creations that wanted to take their rage out on us.
What is all of this?
Fila asked as she looked out at the mounds of garbage that surrounded us. It looks like a junkyard, I responded. We might be able to find a few things to help us restock. Maybe even a freight container.
Like the magpies had,
Emma said with a grin on her rosebud lips. Exactly, I said. I think there's enough light that we can look around. The lanterns don't seem to be paying us any attention.
If they do, then I'll take care of them,
the pale Victorian-era woman said as she lifted her slender fingers. Blue arcs of lightning danced across her delicate hands before she released the energy into the air.
There is no organic material on the lanterns,
Acrasis said with a frown as she joined us on the ledge. The slime girl needed to consume meat as much as Fila did, but I was sure that we had enough dried jerky to last them a few days if everything really was dead. Acrasis had consumed everything in the world where we'd found her, right down to the bees and insects, but she'd only done it because she'd been starved from years of floating in space. She didn't need to eat as much anymore, and I had no intention of letting her get that hungry ever again. She'd become one of my girlfriends, and that meant that I needed to provide for her. I think the humans have abandoned this area, I said. Detroit may have become a landfill, or they may have gone off the planet.
Off the planet?
Fila asked, as she turned her yellow-green cat eyes to me.
What does this mean?
There was a movie in my world where people made so much trash that they had to leave, I explained. They made a space station and moved there.
I do not understand,
the saber-toothed woman replied with a confused look.
They made caves that float in the sky?
Yes, I said with a nod. But for all we know, it's just this area, and the actual city is over the horizon. I'm more concerned with the earthquakes and how we're going to get down into this canyon.
There's a pile of what looks like couches right over there,
Emma said as she pointed to one of the nearby stacks of debris.
We could probably jump over to that.
But we still need to find a way back, and we'll need to be able to bring any materials we find, I mumbled while I began to walk along the perimeter of our pocket dimension. The amber-colored globes of light floated just above my head as I wandered around the ledge and tried to find a way for us to safely go down into the junkyard and come back. There were a few piles near us, like the sofas that Emma had pointed out, but most of them still weren't close enough for us to use when we came back. I finally found one that was near enough that I was pretty sure we could climb down. So I reached up to maneuver one of the solar lamps so that I could see better and held my breath as I waited for the machine's reaction to being touched. I didn't get zapped, and the thing didn't start to beep angrily, so I moved it again until it was right where I needed it. A pile of what looked like broken tables leaned up against our pocket dimension. It seemed like we'd dropped right into the mountain of chipped coffee tables, long farmhouse tables, and flimsy side tables with legs that stuck out at wrong angles. It was stuffed together tight enough that I was pretty sure we could use it as a road, though I still wanted to bring nylon ropes so we could use it to tie us together just in case, especially if there were going to be any more earthquakes. I think I found a way down, I called to the girls. We may want to tie ourselves together just in case there's another earthquake, though.
I found a way down too, Dave Meyer,
Fila called from somewhere to my left. I squinted my eyes as I peered through the mounds of debris and saw the luscious curves of my muscular girlfriend as she picked her way over a pile of what looked like broken laptops. Be careful, I called, as I took a tentative step down onto a dark cherry wood coffee table. There may be rusted metal and glass shards.
I will be cautious,
Fila called back as she squatted down. She shifted her weight, and I watched in awe as her muscles bunched up and she leapt to the top of an old black refrigerator that stood above the microwaves below it. She landed gracefully, her tail swishing behind her, and then she slowly stood as she scanned the area.
"There are some really nice couches down here,"
Emma shouted from near where I'd left her.
"I think Floppy could easily lift these up. I know we have the futons, but it'll be nice to have something else to sit on."
"Don't go too far," I said, as I picked my way over to what looked like an unbroken box of mason jars. "We don't know when the next earthquake will hit." As if it could read my mind, the ground beneath me gave a jolt, and I braced myself against a solid white farmhouse table as one of the smaller side tables in the pile next to me tumbled over its brethren like a stray pebble rolling down a mountainside. I spun to make sure that my girls were okay, and saw that they'd all survived the small aftershock. "We should get back to safe ground," I called. "We can explore more once the sun is up."
"I agree, Dave Meyer,"
Fila responded before she leapt through the air and landed on all fours in the safety of the pocket dimension.
"I just hope that couch doesn't fall further down,"
Emma said with a frown as Floppy pulled her back up onto safe ground with his trunk.
"I will be able to retrieve it if it does,"
Acrasis said, as she reformed from the puddle of oil-slick liquid that spread out over the dirt.
"I have not found any organic material yet."
"We have the jerky." My words were cut short by another aftershock. This one was stronger than the one before it, and I threw out my hands to keep my balance while I squatted and held on to the edge of the table I was standing on. I didn't move again until I was sure that my makeshift road hadn't come loose. And even then I was slow in going across the scratched surface of the maple table.
"Dave Meyer, I suggest you rejoin us,"
Acrasis said as she stretched out one of her arms. The slender arm elongated until her hand was right in front of me, and I wrapped my fingers around her cool skin as I let her pull me back onto the pocket dimension. She kept her hand in mine as I walked closer. Her arm retracted with each step, and soon it was back to its normal length. "Right, so exploring is going to have to wait until the morning, and we'll need to do it as a group so we can make sure no one gets lost," I said, as I looked around at the three beautiful women who I was lucky enough to call mine.
"That nylon rope we have should work just perfectly,"
Emma said as she straightened her black skirt.
"And Floppy can be our anchor, can't you?"
The miniature woolly mammoth nodded his head and flapped his ears in agreement. He patted the ground with one of his hooves and then jumped when the earth gave a little rumble. "It's okay, Floppy," I said, as I patted the frightened bundle of fur. "The pocket dimension is safe."
"Though I do not think the cave is,"
Fila said as she pointed toward our cabin while another aftershock shook us. The wooden structure swayed on the trembling ground. It reminded me of a tree in a tornado, and I was sure that it would topple over any second. "It's janky as fuck." I carefully walked over to the girls, and my feet slipped a few times in the shifting dirt, but the earth stilled as I reached the three beautiful women.
"It does seem like it's about to fall down,"
Emma said in her elegant accent that reminded me of a southern debutante mixed with an English lady.
"I do not think the cave will stand much longer, Dave Meyer,"
Fila said with a frown as she put her hands on her curvaceous hips. Her black tufted tail swished behind her, and her ears swiveled back and forth as she listened for any signs that we weren't alone. "We should get everything out before another earthquake comes," I said, as I looked at the hastily built wooden cabin.
"I agree,"
Emma said.
"It was fine for that water world and for the Aztecs, but it's just not built to withstand these kinds of vibrations."
"Exactly," I agreed. "All right, let's get the food, solar panels, and solar stills out first. The futon mattresses are still lined up on the outside, so they'll be okay."
"And my stove should be able to survive if the walls come down,"
my blue-eyed girlfriend said. The Gibson girl look-alike had been our cook since she joined us, and I'd finally managed to get her a stove in the last world. I was pretty sure she was right. The camping stove was sturdy enough that it wouldn't break even if the walls collapsed on top of it. But I knew that our glass jars of preserves and jerky would not. "Right," I said as I clapped my hands together. "Let's get started. I don't know how long we have until there's another aftershock. Floppy, can you give us a signal if you feel the earth start to shake again? Or if you see anything that might want to attack us?" The miniature woolly mammoth lifted his trunk into the air and gave a little blast before he pawed at the ground. He glanced around at the junkyard that surrounded us, His molten brown eyes scanned the area, and he turned so that he could better see everything.
Good Floppy,
Phyllis said as she patted her pet on the shoulder. The four of us walked forward together, but I held up my hand as we neared the door. I wanted to make sure that it was safe before I led the girls into the potentially dangerous cabin. So I snagged one of the floating lanterns and then released it into the large square room. There were nails on the ground near the walls, and a few of the wooden boards had come loose. The solar panels and stills had tilted over and laid on the ground, but they didn't look like they had been damaged. The wall of crates that we'd created still stood tall, and from where I stood, it didn't look like any of the jars were leaking. Okay, I said as I took a tentative step inside. Let's get this stuff out of here. Be careful of the loose nails, and watch out for those boards. They look like they might pop out any second.
We will be careful,
Phyllis said with a smile that showed off the long fangs that reached over her bottom lip. I watched as the leather-clad saber-toothed woman sauntered over to the fallen solar panels. Her tail poked out from the bottom of her miniskirt, and the fabric inched up over her perfectly round butt as she squatted down to pick up the heavy load. My cock twitched against my pants, but I pulled my gaze away from the muscular catwoman. I needed to focus since there was no telling when another earthquake would hit, though I did steal another glance at the gorgeous woman as she brushed past me. Her tail wrapped around my waist for a second, and the smirk on her face made me realize that she knew exactly what she'd been doing when she bent over like that. I shook my head as I cleared my throat. I had work to do. I couldn't let my girls do all the heavy lifting, and I'd realized over the last few weeks that my job picking up and delivering groceries had left me in better shape than I'd thought. I grabbed two of the crates with jars filled with preserves and followed after Emma as she hurried out into the open air. The blue-eyed beauty was almost completely covered with her high-neck shirt and its long, puffy sleeves, a long black skirt, and tall, button-up leather boots. But there was something undeniably sexy about the way her slim hips swayed in the mounds of linen fabric.
This should be far enough away,
Emma said as she set down her crates. I love watching you work, I purred.
Oh, it's no big effort.
Emma looked up, and her words trailed off when she saw me staring at her. Then she blushed a pretty shade of red, rolled her eyes playfully, and then flashed me the saucy smirk that she'd picked up from Phyllis before strolling past me on her way back for another load. I watched her go as I set down the crates that I'd carried. I couldn't believe that I'd been so lucky to have not one, but three gorgeous women who wanted to have my babies. I'd been pretty much alone after my college had shut down, except for my roommate Aaron and Saul. But since I'd left my dimension behind, I'd found adventure and three amazing women to spend my life with. Life was kind of awesome now. Sure, I couldn't stay in one dimension for more than 3 days, or else some Cthulhu creatures that had Saul's DNA would find me. But I wasn't alone, and so far we'd been able to overcome anything that had threatened us. Plus, the food has been great, and I'd even gotten to try Cambrian-era creatures, which had tasted remarkably like shrimp when Emma had cooked them over the fire. I still wanted to get back to my own dimension, and the few $1 million that my Saul had left me in offshore accounts. But even if I never got back, I was happy.
What are you thinking, Dave Meyer?
Phila asked as she brought out the last of the solar stills. I cleared my throat and debated telling the beautiful cat girl about how lucky I was, but then I realized that I should probably be focused on work, so I nodded to Floppy. I was thinking that we might be able to get this done faster if Floppy hauls it all out on one of our carts.
I'm not sure that we could get one of the carts through the door,
Emma said, as she brought out a crate of spices that she carefully set aside. The door we'd cut into the wall was big enough for the cart and for Floppy when we'd originally made it, but the cabin had started to lean hard to the left after the last aftershock. It would probably collapse in on itself like a stack of cards if one of Floppy's tusks even grazed it. And the cart wasn't exactly precision driving. Right, I said with a nod. We'll just have to move fast. Emma, why don't you and Acrasis organize everything so that we can find what we need later? Phyllis and I should be able to get the rest.
I will help Emma organize,
Acrasis agreed.
Where would you like to put the jars of food? Right over there,
the blue-eyed woman said with a bright smile as she pointed toward the hood of Honest Abe.
I think I can set my stove up right over there, too. All of the solar panels have been removed,
Phyla said, as she returned with an armful of the black glass.
I would like for you to explain to me what these are for once we have time. I'm not sure why you think they are so important.
I will, I said. I think we should be done with everything that might break, but I'll go check just to make sure. I hurried toward the leaning wooden cabin and ducked inside the dimly lit room. I didn't think I'd had enough time to move the table that we'd grabbed, and there were plenty of others to replace it if it broke. But there was a box of Kennedy's moonshine that peeked out from underneath a tarp. I hadn't liked the taste of the stuff, but I knew that it would sanitize anything that it came across. So I grabbed the crate and hefted it into my arms. I ignored my tired muscles as they strained against the heavy load and rushed toward the door as Floppy gave a nervous trumpet. The ground began to shake again, more violent this time than even the first earthquake had been. So I ran out and made it to the girls just before the home we'd built for ourselves collapsed in on itself.